Hello, welcome back to Is It a Mindset? I am your host, Susanna Lemanu-Harris. Today, we will be talking about ethnocentrism and bullying. President Biden has laid out plans to address rising racism against Asian Americans, increasing accessibility to hate crime data, requiring new training for local police, and establishing nearly $50 million in grants to support survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault who face language barriers. The Justice Department will also review for the next month how it can better crack down on violent acts against people of Asian descent in the United States, including by prioritizing persecution of those who commit hate crimes. In some states, including New York, prosecutors need to show that victims were specifically targeted because of their race. Experts have said that establishing such a motive for attacks against Asians is even more challenging because there is no widely recognized symbol of anti-Asian hate, such as a noose or a swastika. Many Democrats have suggested that former President Trump bears some responsibility for the surge in anti-Asian attacks. They say Mr. Trump fanned anti-Chinese sentiment, in particular throughout the pandemic last year, calling the coronavirus the China virus or China flu. The Biden administration's response won praise from members of Congress, including Senator Hirano, Democrat of Hawaii, who, along with Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, criticized the administration 2 weeks ago for lacking Asian representation at its highest levels. Up until the eve of the COVID-19 crisis, the prevailing narrative about Asian Americans was one of the model minority. The model minority concept developed during and after World War II, that Asian Americans were the ideal immigrants of color to the United States due to their economic success. But in the United States, Asian Americans have long considered as a threat to a nation that promoted a whites-only immigration policy. They were called a yellow peril, unclean, unfit for citizenship in America. In the late 19th century, white nativists spread xenophobic propaganda about Chinese uncleanliness in San Francisco. This fueled the passage of the infamous Chinese Exclusion Act, the first law in the United States that barred immigration solely based on race. Initially, the act placed a 10-year moratorium on all Chinese migration. In the early 20th century, American officials in the Philippines, then a colony of the U.S., were supposedly saying that they were uncivilized. Colonial officers and doctors identified two enemies: Filipino insurgents against American rule and tropical diseases festering in native bodies, by pointing to Filipinos' political and medical unruliness. These officials justified and continued U.S. colonial rule in the islands. On February 19, 1942, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed an executive order 9066 to incarcerate people under suspicion as enemies to inland internment camps. While the order was affected, German and Italian Americans on the East Coast, the vast majority of those incarcerated in 1942 were all of Japanese descent. Many of them were naturalized citizens, second and third generation Americans, internees who fought and celebrated the 442nd Regiment, were coerced by the United States military to prove their loyalty to a country that locked them up simply for being Japanese. In the 21st century, the most multicultural North American cities like my hometown of New York City are hotbeds for virulent racism. During the 2003 SARS outbreak, Canadian cities saw a rise of anti-Asian racism, much like that of today. In 2008, a study of sociologist Carrie Ann Leung highlights the everyday racism against Chinese and Filipino healthcare workers in the years that followed the SARS crisis. While publicly celebrated for their work in hospitals and other health care facilities, these women found themselves fearing for their lives on their way home. We will take a break and get back to our other topics. Asian Americans can never have no expression of patriotism. Not even being frontline workers in a pandemic makes Asian migrants immune to racism. Our social justice journey will continue as long as we are aware of the inequalities. Then we are on the path of enlightenment, negating entitlement. My next matter of discourse is adult bullying. I feel the need to talk about bullying at work or the workplace. I, as a child, never stayed at a school long enough to be bullied. I, if you remember, went to all-girl Catholic school from 7th to 12th grade. But moving to the South has demonstrated that bullying doesn't end as an adult. It just takes a different form. I have isolated myself from many people in my school and home community. Gossip thrives all over, and it's so hurtful to those who are victims of it or to it. Even if they don't know something, they will assume something awful. But God forbid they do know something, your character will be compromised. As the number of stories about bullying in America's colleges and schools increases, the sense that there is little that can be done to stop it also seems to increase as case after case ends tragically. Since 2010, in New York State, there has been an anti-bullying statute in place to address these concerns through education and the punishment of offenders. However, when Felicia Garcia, 15, of Staten Island, New York, reached out to an administrator at her school when she reported being harassed by members of her high school football team, the mediation help that she received seems to have done little to alleviate her turmoil. Because in October of 2012, Garcia committed suicide by jumping deliberately in front of a train. So determined was she to end her life in this manner that she shoved off a friend who attempted to save her from falling. The resulting firestorm from this event then included a vigil, silent protests, and a Twitter war regarding the role of the football team in Garcia's death has largely done little other than provide yet another example of how important dealing with bullying is to American culture today, and how difficult it is to know exactly what to do as each new potential bullying case appears. Bullying has been a part of our American culture, our American story of childhood since at least the turn of the 20th century. Films from the early days of Hollywood, the R Gang series, some of the girl roles Mary Pickford played in films like Poor Little Rich Girl, all present what we in America today would call bullying. Children being persecuted physically and or psychologically by other children and or adults. In some of these films, the bullying is presented as a part of a rite of passage from childhood into adulthood, and such may have been tolerated at that time as an unpleasant but expected part of being an American child. Cross-culturally, bullying behavior seems to have been documented in the research of anthropologists, even though bullying has not generally been a central topic in the sciences. American anthropologist Ruth Benedict notes in her controversial ethnography, The Chrysanthemum and the Sword, patterns of Japanese culture that post-World War II Japanese children would collectively gang up on another child in ways that sound like what we would term bullying. This behavior in Japanese culture at the time does not seem to have been noted as problematic in a manner that perhaps parallels American attitudes about similar behaviors at that time. Canadian anthropologist Richard Lee notes in his much updated research that the play of the Ju-Anzi children of Southern Africa includes a great deal of teasing and tormenting that can be found in the relationships between adults that they see constantly around them. Clearly, what is considered acceptable interactions between children varies greatly through time and in every culture. What is considered right is in large part a matter of cultural and historical norms that are taught by adults to children and based on mainstream cultural expectations of what children will have to achieve to become acceptable adults. So where does that leave us in America at the beginning of the 21st century, where bullying has not been defined as a problem, but has also been correlated with increased violence and death among young children and young adults? And we have defined bullying as a wrong is our prerogative, and so is how we choose to establish a solution. Unfortunately, as Felicia Garcia's sad story illustrates, what we have been doing to help solve this problem hasn't always addressed it and can lead to more violence. The basic impetus of or for bullying lies in dealing with difference. We have to teach our population from kindergarten through college and beyond about the difference and provide them with concrete tools for dealing with individual responses to it. A country as culturally diverse as America has no other choice but to do so. Difference doesn't have to be seen as threatening or on any level. Increased exposure to historical and cultural practices that are similar to and different from the contemporary American norm, while reinforcing that no one way is right or wrong. For everyone can be done at every grade level and in classes as diverse as English, social studies, mathematics, music, and science. The goal of this kind of lesson is to support diversity while maintaining respect for and pride in one's own cultural traditions and practices. Contrary to some popular opinion, learning how other people live isn't meant to be taken as a contest about who lives better or worse. It is meant to reinforce a level of comfort with difference that allows for mutual respect and acceptance rather than a need to stamp out difference through covert and/or overt methods. I would add that including anthropology as a basic course, separate from social studies in elementary and high school curricula, would greatly help with this process. Another impetus that leads to bullying lies in gaining power through the subjection of others. American culture is what anthropologists term a stratified culture, where some people have more inherent power in the culture at large than others do. Children and young adults understand this well, since they see it modeled in many ways in American culture, through media, politics, family relations, etc. And they recreate this at school with those around them through methods such as bullying. It isn't necessary to change America's power structure to change the impetus to put others down in order to increase or reinforce one's own standing. This can be achieved alongside increased exposure to cultural and historical differences by reinforcing empathy, learning to place oneself in someone else's position and see things from their perspective is a form of empathy called reflexivity that anthropologists have been practicing for over 100 years in order to conduct scientifically rigorous research. Without taking time to understand life from the perspective of those in another culture, knowing how that culture works is nearly impossible. Lessons in reflexivity, empathy, from elementary school through college can be done in almost any subject and can be taught through courses in anthropology at any age level. Researcher Helle Hansen, who studies bullying through ethnographic methods, notes how bullying creates a harmful community among those who bully and lead to feelings of isolation for those who are bullied. In this way, bullying becomes a social survival strategy that creates a strong in-group feelings of belonging and harmful effects for those kept out. However, Hansen argues that a sense of community is also exactly what can stop bullying. It just needs to be harnessed as a class. This is where teachers come in the picture. The pupils need to feel that they're working together on something. Social and educational projects need to go hand in hand. When researchers emphasize community, it is no wonder ethnographic methods and anthropology have made much to offer fighting against bullying. From Malinowski to Anthony Cohen to Frederick Barth, anthropologists have long worked with issues of belonging, community, and in-group/out-group relations. This is the end of our episode. Ethnocentrism and bullying. I hope that you have connected the parallels between the both evils. Thank you for sharing my journey of living in a socially unjust community and country with me. With Easter comes a resurrection, and I pray that you are metamorphosing your thought process to be more humane and compassionate, weeding out the negative things and people who debilitate the conscientious person you are. You are humble. The person that says something is wrong, even if it's someone in your own family. Look at Major League Baseball. They have taken a stand to voter suppression in Georgia. Being mean and entitled is wrong, whatever costume it puts on. It's been a pleasure. Until next time. Love you.